I'm kind of excited about our next conversation. We found out about our next guest through a former guest that we've had on, Jaylon. She's been on a few times. And we found out about this doctor who lectures on the fact of creation. And he's done this at over 1,000 conferences. I mean, the man is educated. He's a neurosurgeon. He went to the Imperial College of London. He went to Istanbul University. He's spoken at colleges and universities all over the world, University of Texas, Hebrew University in Israel, the Imperial College of London in the UK, just everywhere. And he's here to talk about a subject that is a lot of people are actually starting to question. As science develops, we're seeing more and more atheists leave atheism because they're running into some really big problems here and moving towards a creation sort of scenario. And I thought, well, who better than have a doctor in neurosurgeon medicine talk about this? So Dr. Okbar, or I'm gonna kill your name, sir. You're gonna have to say it for us. It's Akhtar Bubana, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes,
Babuna. All right. Welcome to the show. And Don, could you turn him up just a little bit for me? So obviously, I mean, you're coming out and you talk about creation. That has to be something that the medical profession kind of pushes back a little bit from, don't they?
Well, that's a very important issue because it is first of all, Darwinism claims that life originated by chance, but science says no, it did not originate by chance. There are fossil evidences or impossibility of the proteins to emerge by chance. Scientifically, proves that there must be a creator, and that's a basic issue because Darwinism brings an ethical understanding to the humanity. If you put in the subconscious mind of the people, you're an animal struggling for survival, and you don't owe anything to a creator or existence to a chance, and then you have to fight for survival. And if you're strong, you will survive, and if you're weak, you will get eliminated. This inevitably leads to violence and the terror. That is the reason why Darwinism is so important, and to bring the scientific evidence to falsify Darwinism is a very important issue.
Well, and, you know, to me, one of the things that got me on the side of creationism is this idea that humanity is the superior species, yet in reality, we're the weakest. We wouldn't have survived these millions of years of change in order to get to where we are. I can't see at night. I can't run fast. I'm not born with the ability to swim. You know, when you look around the animal kingdom, they have claws, they have night vision, they have... I mean, for goodness sakes, my 10-pound dog can outrun me. So we're not the perfection of evolutionary design.
But definitely. I mean, this is not, since there is no evolution, there is no perfection of evolutionary design. But there is something which makes humans very different than the animals, which is the soul. For example, we can think, we can judge, we can take the electron microscope and do research on our own bodies. We can build Paris, London, New York. And we can build civilizations, we can speak. That makes us very different than the animals. Having the soul, the consciousness of which is a part of the soul. And that makes us very different from the animals. But you're right, of course, humans are not very strong. We cannot survive when we don't stay at our homes, for example. We have to be protected. But the main difference is the soul. That makes us very different from the animals.
Well, you know, some people might argue that your soul doesn't actually exist, and they might say it's just our mind has been so developed that we needed to create systems and structures in which other humans can interact with people, and that's where we get society and ethics and all this other sort of stuff. Because as I listen to some of these atheists who kind of support Darwinism, they have this explanation for everything that is unexplainable as just societal evolution. So how do you think societal evolution plays into physical evolution?
Well, there is no evolution, first of all. We should understand that. The thing is, and that's, for example, about the consciousness and the existence of the soul is a scientific fact, and I will explain you why. For example, I'm a neurosurgeon. Everybody knows this is a scientific fact from which is taught in the high schools and the universities. The way we see is there are electric signals in the brain. There's complete darkness in the brain. So the eye converts the photons, the simulation of the photons, into electric signals. So does the ears. And the touching sensation and smell and taste are all converted to electric signals. So in the brain, only electric signals exist. But these electric signals are interpreted as a three-dimensional, colorful world, as musical sound, for example, as the taste of the banana and strawberries, or smell of the perfume, or touching sensation, the hardness of the matter, for example. So there must be an inner eye which can see, there must be an inner ear which can hear, there must be an inner nose which can smell, an inner tongue which can taste. And this is our soul, because interpretation of the electric signals in a colorful, three-dimensional colorful world, in fact, the light does not exist outside. We know that physically also, because the atoms, 99% nothingness, there's complete darkness right. in the atoms, and the photons are particles, very little particles, which are emitted by the electrons. So there is no color, there is no light outside, but the interpretation is light and color. That means there must be a metaphysical being, and that is our soul. So this is a scientific fact, which inevitably leads to the existence of the soul. It is, cannot be the brain, because the brain consists of atoms also. The atoms, which are 99% of nothingness, cannot think, cannot judge, cannot see, cannot hear, cannot touch.
Yeah, so in a sense, what you're saying is your brain is just a processing center for that information to convey that information then to your soul?
Well, intermediate stage. But remember, I will give you another very powerful example, evidence. In fact, everybody, during the night, when we sleep, we have dreams. In our dreams, we walk, we see the sun, we drive, we see places that we have never seen before in our life. We see people we have never seen in our life before. We can touch, we can sense, we can smell, we speak, we hear sounds. So when we wake up, we find ourselves lying in the bed in complete darkness. There is no sound, there is nothing. But seconds ago, we were walking. We were seeing the sun, we were feeling the temperature of the sun. But that means the material world, the so-called the outside world, only exists at the level of the perception. But we cannot confront with the real existence of the matter. We can never touch the real matter outside. We can never see the real existence of the matter outside. We are only in touch with our perceptions in our mind. That means there must be a creator of these perceptions. The perceptions are created. They exist definitely. And this is all the physicists and the scientists today, they accept this reality. So, like in our dreams, the same system is applied to this world also. We see these perceptions, but there is no evidence for believing in the theoretical existence of the material world. We have direct contact only with the perception in our minds. We have never seen, heard, tasted, smelled, or touched the existence of anything apart from these perceptions. And the world we live is a world of perceptions. And then, of course, inevitably leads, who creates these perceptions? There must be a creator, and that is God.
Well, you know, just for some reference for the listeners, I remember I was watching a lecture from a physics professor at MIT. And he was explaining, obviously it was for people like me, laymen. He was explaining how if we took an atom, and the center of the atom was we had made the size of a grapefruit. The electron that is going around that atom would be 3 miles away. So when we're talking to you and you're saying that we're made up of nothing, I mean, that nothing really exists. It's really true. 99% of everything is absolutely nothing, which is trippy. But we're up against a break, so let's take that break and we'll continue the conversation when we get back. Don't go anywhere. The thing I love about science is that logic and reason reign. I mean, everything has to make sense. And we're seeing a rise of scientists who might not have a certain religious belief, but just scientifically, they're starting to say, well, maybe the universe is just a hologram. Maybe we don't understand it at all. Maybe it's just an electromagnetic creation in somebody's imagination. I mean, there are a lot of high-level scientists who are starting to say, yep, there is no possible way. There's no possible way that this was a Big Bang sort of random chance circumstance. It's just not scientifically possible. And we're talking about that topic with Dr. Oktar Bubana. He's a neurosurgeon, a scientist himself, and he lectures on this subject. So kind of pick up where you left off, sir. And we were talking about how there's nothing really around us. We only perceive existence. And studying radio waves, I mean, I know that everything has a frequency, including the desk that I'm working on, that the only reason I can't pass through it is my frequency is out of harmony with that frequency, so it stops me. There's actually nothing physically stopping that from happening.
Well, a lot of physicists accept, for example, I'll give you another powerful evidence, which is called the double slit experiment. It is a well-known physical experiment. Yeah, in the this double slit experiment, they send electrons through one slit first and then through double slit after that. if they send the electrons through one slit, it acts like marbles, like particles, all right? But if they send these electrons through double slit, it acts like waves, like, for example, water waves. They give shadows on the screen, but this is a shadow of waves which interact with each other. So it shows a wave character. Wave is not like water waves, but it's like something like nothingness. So in one slit, it acts like marbles, like particles. In double slit, it acts like nothingness. So what they do is they use a measuring device. They put a measuring device to measure how the electrons behave in one slit and the double slit experiment. And what they see is, and if they put a measurement device, it acts like marbles again, particles again in double slit experiment. So first, without measuring device in double slit experiment, it acts like waves, like nothingness. It disappears. So in one, if they put a measurement device, which is consciousness, of course, if there is a consciousness watching the electrons, it exists again as it acts like particles. So it follows scientifically, the matter only exists if there is a consciousness observing, if there is an observer watching the matter as a matter. But if there is no consciousness,
and you are absolutely right.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, they've done experiments with atoms where they've had to lock them in a vault and, you know, nobody look at it, just because they've realized, wait a second, if anybody actually looks at an experiment we're doing, it affects it. It actually changes it. So not only is what's around us only perception, but the reality of what is around us is determined by that perception itself. I mean, it kind of gets really trippy, but that's the way it's working out. I mean, that's what the scientific research is showing.
Yeah, that is a pure scientific fact. It's not a philosophy or a belief. And the way, for example, if it, again, go back to the structure of our brains, we only are in contact with the electric signals in our brain. So electric signals are... it's not matter. It's not hardness of the matter. It's not the smell of a perfume, or it's a colorful three-dimensional view. It's not. Electric signals are electric signals. So these electric signals are interpreted as three-dimensional colorful world, and music sound, and the perfume, and the hardness, and the temperature of the matter. So there must be an inner being which perceives the matter as a matter, but itself is not a matter. It's that is our soul. So the powerful evidence comes from our dreams again. The dreams, in our dreams, the matter we see in our dreams, the outside world, does not exist in reality. So, for example, we live in a house in our dreams that we have never seen before. We see people that, right, that we have never seen before. We do weird things, and the physical laws are different. For example, sometimes we can fly in our dreams. But in fact, yeah, we can, of course, because of the gravity and our... we don't have the flying equipment. We are not equipped to fly. We cannot fly. We know that scientifically. But in our dreams, we can fly. So also in our dreams, we are created with a different memory. We do very weird things. We talk to the people that we have never seen before. But we think in our dreams that we know these people since like 40 years, 50 years. So in our dreams, we are created in a different time dimension, in a different world, so-called outside world, with a very different memories. So the same system can be applied to this world also. When we wake up, this is a real world, and that is dream, because the dreams are shorter, and the vision of this world is clearer, of course. But this is not a basic difference. But the system is the same. So these perceptions, everything is created at the level of the perceptions. This is a scientific fact. But then there must be a creator of these perceptions, and that is God. But infinite wisdom and power creates all these perceptions. And, of course, these perceptions exist. The people exist. The perceptions exist. But we should never forget the real reality, the real existence is the God. And we are only shadow beings because we carry the soul of the God.
Well, and what's interesting about this is a lot of people have suggested that those senses, that those perceptions, that those must be nerve endings, those must be brain pathways that are just working things out, even to some extent entertaining themselves. You know, we've developed the sense of smell to protect us and make us hungry and all that sort of stuff. And even if we have those senses for those realities, we can no longer, based on scientific evidence, suggest that these senses are just there because of the neurological formation. The neurological formation is actually there as the result of the sense.
All right, and I will give you then with a scientist whose name is Professor Roger Penrose from the United Kingdom. He's a very famous mathematician and physicist, and from Cambridge University. He has a book called Emperor's New Mind. In this book, Roger Penrose says what makes human beings as human being is, he says, there are two reasons and which makes human beings very different than the matter. The first one comes from, for example, all the atoms in our body are being renewed, he says, and he's right in that. For example, the atoms of the brain is changed during our life constantly, several times. All the atoms of all other organs and skin is changed constantly. So entire body, the atoms of entire body change several times during our life. So the second reason, he says, for example, if you take the electrons and the protons and the neutrons of our brain, which is no different than the electrons, protons, and the neutrons of the bricks of the wall, and we change the electrons of the brick with our electrons of our brain, the protons of the bricks with the protons of our brain, and the neutrons with the neutrons of our brain. But he says we still remain as a human being, the same person, and the brick does not get any consciousness. So he says that proves us it is not the matter which gives us this consciousness, the way the ability of thinking, judging, and being happy, for example, or for example, scientific research. Do you understand? It is not the matter which has this consciousness. The brain consists of electrons, protons, and neutrons, which are no different than all other atoms. But it cannot be the atoms. It cannot be the cells, because the cells consist of protein molecules, lipid molecules, and carbohydrate molecules, which consist of atoms. And as you mentioned before, these atoms consist of 99% of nothingness. And, of course, they cannot think, they cannot judge, they cannot build the cities of Paris, London, and New York.
One second before we get to a break, because we're coming up on another break. As a neurosurgeon, what you are saying then, correct me if I'm wrong, is that your brain is essentially dark, that your brain does not create its own consciousness. The chemical hormone makeup, the neurons, the synapses firing, that does not create your consciousness. That has to come from someplace else.
Definitely. I mean, even the brain itself is a part of our the world of consists of perceptions. For example, in our dreams, if somebody would ask us, where do you see, where can you touch, we would hold our two imaginary hands in our dream, our imaginary head, and tell these people, this is where we see, that we can hear, that we can
good
touch,
point.
And we can smell.
Good point. Hold on one second, Doctor. We're up against a break. We'll be back. Don't go anywhere. All right, Doctor. So we're talking about the evidence suggesting a form of creation. And as we look around the high-level scientific community, you know, you still have a couple people who are fighting it out of pride, you know, the Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hutchinson before he died. You still have some of these people who are fighting it out of pride, even though the vast majority of scientific research is now suggesting, without any religious bias, the evidence is just suggesting there's no possible way that all of this was just random chance. And when we look at astronomy, when we look at just any area of science, whether it's biology or even the study of the formation of the Earth, none of these things suggest evolution. So why do people continue to believe this? I mean, personally, I think the reason people want to continue to believe it is because in the face of evidence, they don't want to have to deal with the idea that there's something bigger than us out there.
Yes, I will quote from Richard Dawkins, and he explains very well, actually, why Darwinism is defended against so many scientific evidences, although science falsifies Darwinism. He says, Richard Dawkins says, before Darwin, it was difficult to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist, and Darwin made it easy to become an intellectual atheist. That is the reason to keep atheism alive. The Darwinism is defended against so many scientific evidences. For example,
wow.
Charles Smith, he is the president of Atheist Foundation in United States. He said Evolution is atheism. And to keep atheism alive, these people defend Darwinism against so many scientific evidences. How do we know if evolution happened or not? From the fossil evidence, of course. Even Charles Darwin makes a statement that he says we can find the fossil, scientific evidence of whether evolution happened or not only in the fossil evidence, he says. But in the same book, Origin of Species, Charles Darwin also says there are no transitional forms. The pathological asymmetrical transitions between species, which is a must for evolution. Evolution, they say, happened gradually, step by step. So there must be pathological asymmetrical transitions. And we must have this in the fossil evidence. But we have 400 million fossils today, but we do not have any transitions, not even a single transitional form. The species appear abruptly, complete, and perfectly formed. For example, Stephen Jay Gould. He's a very prominent Darwinist paleontologist of the 20th century. He died several years ago for Harvard paleontologist. He said, fossils have two features, a sudden appearance and stasis. Stasis means they don't change during the tenure on the Earth. For example, they appear at the Cambrian period, 500 million years ago, starfish, for example. It doesn't change up to date. It remains exactly the same. That means, of course, no evolution. And Charles Darwin also says in his book, this is a quote from Charles Darwin, why species have descended from other species by insensibly fine gradations. Do we not everywhere see innumerable transitional forms? He questions. And then he goes, but as by this theory innumerable transitional forms must have existed, why do we not find them embedded in countless numbers in the crust of the Earth? He says, geology assuredly does not reveal any such finely graduated organic chain, and this perhaps is the most obvious and gravest objection which can be urged against my theory. He's right. There are no transitional forms. Of course, no transitional forms means no evolution. And if you look at the 3.8 billion years ago, the first living cell on Earth, the cyanobacteria are red and blue algae, which can do photosynthesis, which we have today also, the cyanobacteria, appear all at once. This was published in Nature magazine, Science magazine, all the scientific magazines, Australia, Church region, 3.8 billion years ago, all of a sudden, complete and perfectly formed, which can do photosynthesis. That is creation, of course. It's not evolution. Because step by step, formation by chance, it's scientifically and logically impossible. If you take a single protein molecule, as you know, for example, in human bodies, there are more than 200,000 different protein molecules. In the nature, there are trillions of different protein molecules in millions of species. If you check a single protein molecule, which is a building block of a cell, single protein molecule, whether it can emerge by chance or not, the answer is impossible. It's not low chance, it is impossible, because proteins can only be formed by other proteins, enzymes. At least 100 different enzymes must exist at the same time. This is not enough. DNA must exist because the proteins are encoded in the DNA, the right sequence of the amino acids. This is not enough. Energy is required. The energy organelle of the cell must exist, mitochondria. This is not enough. A complete living cell must exist to form a single protein, produce a single protein molecule. This demolishes evolution completely. This is, of course, creation. And life, this is also a rule in the biology textbooks. If you can look, Campbell, Rees, biology textbooks, these are the most famous Darwinist textbooks of the biology. They have the same statement. They say, life is only generated from life. Each living cell is formed by the replication of another cell. In this respect, the first life on Earth must have originated from other life. This is a reflection of God's epithet of Hi. That means the owner of life. Life can only.
And you have the law of information too. Nothing inanimate, nothing that was devoid of life, can convey information. So even if we're like, this chemical and this chemical created this sort of chemical reaction, you still have to have the conveying of information. And our DNA is information. The information for a cell to reproduce itself as a blood cell or, whatever. That information has to be conveyed. And information cannot come from inanimate objects. There has to be the replication. So, the theory is just void. I mean, there's no possible way that you can be a logical thinking person, somebody who respects evidence and still believe in evolution, still believe in this random chance, which is why, as you suggested, the only reason they defend it is so they can defend their religious belief, which is no deity. And, you know, that just comes down to stupidity and pride. There are a lot of very intelligent, stupid people living amongst us. But before we let you go, because we only have a few minutes, I want to talk about something we were talking about during the break. And this is the idea of the infinite, infinity. Einstein had a problem with it. Everybody seems to have a problem with this idea of contemplating infinity. It gives us a headache when we try to comprehend this. So talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Time is a dimension which is created for us. It only exists at the level of perception. In reality, there is no such thing as absolute time. How do you know, for example, Einstein also claimed the relativity of time. Time is relative, he said. It depends on the speed and the mass of the objects. So what is time then? What is the scientific explanation of time? The scientific explanation of time is, which is a dimension that we live in, we have our memories. For example, we have the memories of the childhood, the primary school, the high school, the university, and then the moment we came into this room. For example, you came into the radio station and I came into my room over here. So every time we get a new information, for example, this is a sound noise that you heard. This is the second one I made. And by making comparison between the previous memories, we get the perception there is a time passing between these two new information by the comparison of the memories. How do we know that? For example, if we would wipe out our memories completely, we cannot keep anything in our memory, we completely lose the perception of the time. That's the reason why people who stay in coma, for example, 10 years, 20 years sometimes, they wake up all of a sudden and they don't remember. The last thing they remember is the last moment they went into the coma, and there is no time for them between the time perception of 13, 15, 20 years. Also, in our dreams, for example, we see the dreams, we know dreams only last for a few seconds. But we get the perception, we get the feeling of we were in our dreams like there were days, weeks long, we were alive. But in reality, the dreams objectively only last for a few seconds. So the definition of time is the comparison of the memories gives the perception of time. So God created that for us. But God is beyond time. That means God is infinite, which means in infinite fraction of a single moment, God created the entire infinite life and finished it. Can we comprehend that? No, because we are created in the dimension at the dimension of time. So it is very hard to comprehend the infinity, but this is also a scientific fact which inevitably follows from the scientific evidence that I've just given.
You know, when we talk about these things, there's obviously going to be people who just refuse to accept science as evidence. And they always say, well, your scientific evidence is just because of religious bias. When in reality, when you look at the evidence, and you see how this atheist view perpetrates science, it's actually that atheistic religious view that is corrupting the evidence. And it's just time that we put on our big boy pants and realize, yeah, you know what? Something created this. And I would think, as a logical grown adult, you would want to determine who that is, what they want, where we all came from. And it doesn't even include aliens, because if you think about it, somebody invented the aliens. They work on the same scale of matter and rules of physics. So it's that's not the answer either. So don't say aliens did it.